This is a tape two, side two, Lawrence Henderson interview, August 30th, 1989. One prominent issue about regarding proper balance in research was the issue of short-term research versus Rand's commitment to long-term studies. And the sense that we get from other interviews is that over time, through the 50s, there was increasing pressure to get engaged with short-term studies, operational questions that the Air Force needed answers to on a short-term basis, that Rand was concerned would, or at least some analysts at Rand, some management at Rand were concerned would detract from the longer-range studies that they felt were the real essence of corporate activity. How did you view this issue?
I think I view that issue in a slightly different way. I don't necessarily regard this as long-term versus short-term. I regard it more as operational or decision questions versus planning or technical research. I don't know what you call it. In other words, if you have a physics department, let's say, you're concerned with the potential of different kinds of atomic explosives, different kinds of bombs, different kinds of potential weapons, some of which may be long way off, some of which may be relatively near. You're also concerned with the question of the operational characteristics of weapons, the impact on them. Now, I don't see how you can tell whether it's long-term or short-term in this kind of sense. If, for example, Sam Cohen invented the neutron bomb. Now, was that a long-term technical study, or was it just something that occurred like this, and he was able to put together some ideas that already existed, or some technology? It's hard to say, and I think that it's very true that over a period of time, when Rand started, we didn't have a clue about operational questions because we didn't know anything about them. And so we started out with a bunch of studies which were, you might say, long-term. The materials research that we sponsored at Battelle, for example, was certainly long-term. Some of the mathematics research was long-term, but it resulted in a lot of immediate short-term things. Like the computer developments that helped IBM in the early days in a very major way. And the mathematics and computer development that was useful to Los Alamos in their planning, some of it long-term, some of it immediate. I think it's true that we have gotten away at Rand from some of the long-term technical research or technical studies that we did. For example, we did work in aerodynamics on the ring wing and things of that sort, which certainly was you'd regard as technical long-term thing, as opposed to studying the question of what the takeoff and landing characteristics of the next bomber should be, for example, and or how you should base the bomber force, or should you have a bomber force? Should you have, what are you going to? How are you going to base the MX and the midget man and so on? And this has been going on for now. Whether those are long-term studies or short-term studies, they're more operational in the sense that they relate to what's going to happen or might not happen in the real world. What kind of a posture do you want to have in the real world? militarily. That's important. Now, what you're able to do, you look at the SDI program, for example. A lot of that research may eventually be useful, but in terms of operations, it's of no significance whatever at the moment, and may not ever be. But we got more and more involved in things like the basing of bombers, or how you base the ICBMs, whether you should have ICBMs, the relationship between the detectability of submarine-launched missiles, or the submarine force versus the land-based force, so on. These things obviously caught the imagination of analysts who were interested in working beyond their technical specialty, but on more broader things. On the other hand, there were guys who were very good in their technical specialty, who wanted to do research in their technical specialty. I don't know how much of that still goes on at RAND. I think it's important, and Frank felt very strongly about this. It's very important to have a base of technological research at the limits, so that you were up to date on what was going on. You were trying to look at technological possibilities and so on, so that you didn't miss anything. And so then, if you got involved in an operational question where the technological limitation was important, you knew how far you could go and what you could do. But I do think that while I was very much interested in the technical, the technological stuff that was being done, I thought it was fascinating. I mean, the development of titanium and the first satellite report and so on, this all happened fairly early in the game, and I found that absolutely fascinating. But my interest, as I say, my interest during the war had been primarily operational, and my experience had been operational, and I was not a technical man at all. But it's not that I didn't feel that this technical work was extremely important and very interesting. But as soon as we started to get into more operational stuff, I felt very much at home, and I didn't feel that was likely to be harmful to RAND in that sense. So that although I shared Frank Kolbom's feeling about the importance of doing advanced technical research, it seemed to me that there really wasn't anything wrong with doing the operational work too, as long as you did it right. It was very difficult to do. It's very difficult to do it right.
Yeah. In our discussion about the early period of RAND, when RAND first got rolling, you indicated that the elements of the Air Force didn't really know what kind of questions to pose to RAND, what things to ask them
to
do.
That's right.
Certainly, as you get into the 50s, this isn't a problem, as I understand it. I mean, there was plenty of input from the Air Force about things that RAND might do.
Sure.
So it becomes a question of how you select what to do.
That's right.
What role, if any, did you play in that process of kind of filtering the most likely candidates down to the research staff?
Well, to the extent that I played any role in that at all, I was obviously opposed to answering what you might call quick and dirty questions to help some action officer in the air staff solve an immediate problem. Now, that was something that was one of the reasons why ANSWER was set up. As you may know, I was involved in the early days before ANSWER. They had a contract with MELPAR to do this kind of thing, the development planning people in the air staff and so on. And then we set up ANSWER to do to help to the extent that you could outside of the air staff. Of course, the air staff had a fairly active Office of Operations Analysis. Which I guess they don't have anymore now. If they have that, mainly it's at SAC. But the notion was that rather than RAND set up a separate division here or bring a lot of people in here to do these short-term, quick and dirty things, we'd set up a separate organization that would concentrate mainly on this kind of thing. And they do a lot of what you might call short-term operational studies, some many of which would be appropriate for RAND, and there's some overlap in interest. But I, except for kind of fending off these very short-term operational questions, I didn't really have much role in the selection of what at RAND what we would do, which questions we would find either researchable or of interest or worthwhile doing.
I guess maybe another angle on it is what was the conduit for Air Force requests to RAND? Did they, things come through you, or did they just go willy-nilly to the research staff? How did that work?
Well, often they would go to the research staff, but mainly they'd go to Frank, or they would ask me. I don't think there was any. I mean, again, we didn't spend much time or effort on formal paperwork or this kind of thing. In other words, if somebody wanted to ask RAND to do something, in theory, there was an Air Force mechanism whereby you could do this. But basically, most of the important questions were solved by informal contact and discussion. And if somebody thought there was an important problem, and there were some analysts at RAND or the management of RAND thought it was an important problem and that something we could do something about, then we'd try to find a way of doing it. I don't think there was any really formal. There were requests, for RAND to do things, but I never attached much significance to the formal.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to get a sense of what the role of the Washington office was. I mean, typically, did they come to Washington first?
Not really. Or? No, I don't think so. I don't think they came very often to the Washington office. I don't know.
Let's talk a little bit then about the circumstances that led up to the formation of ANSWER and your involvement in that activity.
Well, it was the period when we had some people from RAND working in the office of the Development Planning Office under the Deputy Chief of Staff for Research and Development. And the later Deputy Chief of Staff Development, actually. And then, as I say, people like General Schriever and others felt they needed a kind of a captive RAND that they could, or captive section of RAND that they could use to try to do a better job of analyzing the problems that they were faced with. And they had to make recommendations to the air staff about certain kinds of weapons development and that kind of thing, and they wanted to, they wanted an analytical capability that they could, over which they had some control. And particularly time-wise, I mean, RAND is sitting in Santa Monica, and RAND is thinking about the future, and we ask them a question, and we need an answer by the 5th of November, and RAND says, oh, no way, and so on, and this is disappointing, and we don't like this, and why doesn't RAND set up an organization here in Washington or in the Pentagon that will answer these questions? And our conclusion was, no way, we don't want to have two kinds of RAND, one in Washington and one in Santa Monica, and we've already done too much about this by having some RAND people sitting in the Office of Development Planning. Anyway, And
so they serve this kind of function then.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so the idea was, well, the Melpar contract suffers from the same kinds of things that the Douglas contract with Rand suffered from. You know, it's industry and so on, and we ought to divorce it from industry and so on. So we said, well, why don't we set up a separate corporation, which will be independent, just as Rand is, to do this particular job. And so that's what we did. And I went around and got a bunch of trustees for it, including Fred Hovde, who was president of Purdue, whom I had known during the war in the NDRC missile business, and Joe Platt, who was retiring this fall as the chairman of ANSWER. And we had several other people. Carol Haskins was a trustee at first, and then Ed Ackerman, who later died, who succeeded Carol. And we had some people associated with Rand who were on the board as trustees. And the thing was run by people who had experience in Air Force operations analysis, particularly in the office at SAC. Stan Lawwell, who was the president of ANSWER for a long time and is now retired, and Jack England, who is now the president, had been in Air Force operations analysis. And this became entirely independent very, very shortly. We helped to finance, Rand helped to finance them at first, and now they're entirely independent and so on. And Rand never tried to tell them how to operate. I mean, this was up to their board of trustees, and of which I was a member, of course, and Bennett Bosky is still a member. Their board of trustees and management. Well, the management, having come from Air Force operations analysis, knew something about the problem of doing quick and dirty studies for the Air Force, where the Air Force needed some analytical work on a problem that they had to make some sort of a decision on, and fairly immediate. And they had had some experience with technology. I mean, they weren't just strictly operations research people. They'd done a lot of work in helping SAC decide a lot of operational questions, but also some technical questions of what kinds of things they should be getting to improve the capability of the SAC bomber fleet and so on. Well, ANSWER has grown. It's now a fairly substantial organization, a large organization, and they're still doing the same kind of work. I've been out of it since 1971, I guess. So I'm not really up to date, although I talk to the people from time to time. Bennett Bosky is my lawyer, personal lawyer, and he's been active. He's been chairman of the executive committee for a long time and so on. And as I say, I knew a lot of the original trustees, and I still know some of the present ones. And they seem to be doing a competent job within their limitations. The way they operate has never been to my taste at all. I wouldn't have wanted to get involved in it. I was perfectly willing to serve as a trustee and all that, and I encouraged them in what they were doing. But and their studies are quite good, but basically they're too much under the control of the Air Force. On the other hand, they're trying to do something that the Air Force does in fact need. They need an analytical capability to work on questions that they determine. In other words, ANSWER doesn't determine what questions to work on. The Air Force does. That's the big contrast between ANSWER and RAND.
Did any of the RAND staff transfer over to ANSWER?
Not that I'm aware of. There may have been a few at the very beginning, but I don't think so. No.
Well, did this establishment of ANSWER substantially alleviate this problem for RAND? Did the Air Force?
I guess it must have. I had the feeling that we were still getting a lot of questions that we didn't necessarily want to answer or felt we couldn't answer. But I guess, sure, I would say it probably alleviated it. It certainly made life easier in terms of our contact with the people who were administering RAND in the Air Staff. Because instead of their looking to us always for the questions that they had to seek immediate solutions to, they now had an organization to go to ask the same questions. So they stopped bugging me, if you will, to the extent that they were doing that. Okay. That's the development planning business. Now, it's true that ANSWER now works for a lot of different parts of the Air Staff, too. This is just the kind of the way these things grow. The other parts of the Air Staff found out that there was an organization that would do analytical work on command, so to speak, and it was working for development planning, so they would try to sneak in, you know, and get the use of this, obviously, to them, useful service. And that still goes on.
Okay. Let me just pause here for a second.
This is sure. The end of tape 2, side 2.